Perfect.
All right. Okay, ladies and gentlemen of the podcast world, for the Australian Mini Football, it gives us great pleasure to introduce our next guest. This gent is a legend of the world as we see it. He is Mr. Bruce Buffer, the man who says before the UFC fights, it's time and we are live. And we are live now with Bruce Buffer. Bruce, welcome to the Australian Mini Football Federation's podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me on very much, Miguel and Brian, you too. And as the saying goes, it's time. Let's get this going right. You got it.
Perfect. Hey, for those people that don't know you out there in the world who have been sleeping under a rock, can you just give us a bit of a brief on who you are and what you do? And we know that you have brucebuffer.com and you've also got your podcast, It's Time. If you can just let the people know out there a little bit more about yourself so we can then roll into it.
Sure. What I'm known most for is for the last 23 years, as of February 16th of this month, I celebrate my 23rd anniversary of being the voice of the Octagon, which is the Octagon announcer for the UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship. And I'm the tuxedo guy in the Octagon that announces all the fighters, and been loving doing that, love doing it. It's my favorite thing to do. And I also manage my legendary brother, Michael Buffer, of Let's Get Ready to Rumble fame, the famous boxing and sports entertainment announcer. And we've been partners, and I've been managing his career for probably close to 27 years now. And very excited about all that and a variety of other things. As you mentioned, brucebuffer.com. You can go there to see the videos and the audios I offer and everything else that we do. But I don't want to bore you with all I do in life because, quite frankly, Miguel, I sometimes bore myself thinking about all I have to do.
Oh, man. It doesn't seem like it'd be a boring life. It looks like it's full tilt, so... 25 years of the UFC, you said you've been there for 23, or was it 13, Bruce?
Yeah, 23 years.
Yeah, so almost the full amount. Is this the best year ever that you've seen the matchups, etc.? From where I sit, I'm a massive UFC fan. I think Miguel is as well. We went to the Perth event, and I think Miguel's went to one in Vegas many years ago. Are the matchups this year like as the most epic ever?
Well, I won't say the most epic ever, because one thing is, you know, in the 23 years I've been doing it, I've seen so many fights that I thought were the greatest fights, and then boom, another great fight comes along. But what it is, it's definitely up there. There's no question, if not possibly being the greatest ever, when you see what's happened over the last year, because the last, actually all through the year, but, you know, it's just been home run events, very exciting, one after the other after the other. I was not in Fortaleza, Brazil on Saturday. For that show, they wanted to, you know, rest me before I went to Melbourne, although I still work this weekend and something else. But that show was extremely exciting. And the one we have for Melbourne coming up this coming weekend is just loaded. I mean, Israel Adesanya and Anderson Silva, hello. You know, Kevin Gastelum going heads up in his race against Robert Whittaker, you know, the Australian hero. In mixed martial arts, it's a big night. Big night.
Yeah, it's huge. He's well, we like to think that he's Australian, but he is a New Zealander. But we take all those good New Zealanders on as Australians.
That's yeah, question. You know, when somebody's from New Zealand and they're fighting, it's like one of my favorite actors of the past was Errol Flynn, the classic actor from before. And I think he was considered a New Zealander, but he'd refer to people and say he was from Australia. Is that proper? For a New Zealander to recognize himself as being representing Australia, or are they two separate?
They're definitely two separate. I think that obviously they hold onto their heritage quite strong, but I think basing themselves in somewhere like Sydney, there's a lot more opportunity to get higher level coaching or higher level whatever it might be in business. I mean, you know, Russell Crowe, he's a New Zealander, but we take him as our own. So the Australians don't mind taking what's good. And we'll leave what's bad.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it. You just said that about Russell Crowe, who's actually had a little good and bad at times. But, you know, he's one of my favorite actors. The man's body of work is amazing. But I didn't know he was a New Zealander. I see, I thought Russell Crowe was Australian.
There you go, mate. We can bluff anyone if we want.
I'll try me at the table, my man.
No, I don't want to do that. I've seen your poker face, and I'm pretty sure I'll shake in my boots, mate.
Okay.
Hey, Bruce, now that we're talking about the best fights and stuff, I remember when I went to Vegas to the UFC 100, and I mean, I don't know if you remember, I'm pretty sure you do, but like for me, it's been the greatest event with, I think, the most championships for belt. I think it was three of them, including it was like, you know, we had Brock Lesnar, we have GSP, we have Frank Mir, we had, who else was in there?
Silver.
I think
it was. You had George St. Pierre, Thiago Alves, you had Bisping and Henderson, you had Paulo Thiago and John Fitch. You also had Mark Coleman, the legendary fighter, who was Stefan Bonner back then.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. What do you think about that? Do you think the UFC 100 has been one of the best ever?
There's no question that it is tantamount one of the most historically greatest shows the UFC ever held. You know, when you talk about an individual show, for a couple of reasons. Number one, it was the 100th pay-per-view, which we're now coming on 234, coming in. You had the three championships, which I remember, Krucker, you're correct on, heavyweight, welterweight, and middleweight.
Yeah.
And, you know, the devastating way the Henderson-Bisping fight ended, George St. Pierre being George St. Pierre, Brock Lesnar, the monster that he is and was at that time, that everybody wanted to see. You also had John Jones fighting Jake O'Brien in one of his early fights.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, this card was loaded. And for me personally, it was a very monumental night because that was the night after 6 months of push on the internet from Joe Rogan and the fans that I pulled off the 360 in front of Brock Lesnar. So it's definitely memorable for me.
Yeah, no, of course. I remember meeting there a few stars, and one of them was Zlatan Ibrahimovic, the soccer player for he used to play for Barcelona in that time, and he was there. And I remember meeting also Ariane Celeste, and it was very, very exciting.
Well, you're in the presence of Ariane, it's thoroughly understandable. The girl just gets more beautiful as time goes on.
Yeah, that's it. It gets better and better, isn't it?
Some people are lucky in the way they age, let me tell you.
That's it.
Bruce, what's it like?
Ariane works hard. Ariane takes care of herself. She really works hard to stay on top of her game, but I give her credit.
Yeah, of course. Of course she does.
What's it like being at ringside in at the UFC? I mean, it's obviously, if not the number one sport growing globally, and it's very, very brutal. Which, you know, as males we love, but what's it like being on ringside and seeing it so close? And you know, you feel every punch. You feel it. You know, what's it like?
Well, I feel every punch, but I don't want to feel every punch. If you know what I'm saying. and again, one slight correction, but we all make the same mistake. It's octagon side because we can't refer to a ring in the UFC. That's our wonderful boxing counterparts. But I will tell you that it's kind of hard to explain, because when you're there for a big night, whether it's Conor and Habib, whether it's Brock and Mir, you know, the energy just carries itself. And as a result, your adrenaline, I'm speaking for myself, the adrenaline gets pumped. I get more excited to get back in with each announcement as I build it up to a crescendo for the main event. You're watching the greatest conditioned athletes in the world by many people's standards, and the most highly skilled fighting athletes in the world going at it. It's a supreme moment, and it's not like you're there. It's not just the same. You're there for a championship, even a UFC fight night. These men and women coming into the octagon are walking in on any given night to prove themselves to themselves, to prove themselves to the fans, to prove themselves to the powers that be at the UFC with, you know, like Dana and everybody, that they want to continue to fight, and they're all going for the championship. They're putting their blood, sweat, and tears on the line, and it's very proper to respect that, everything they're doing, when you really sit back and realize what this moment means for those two fighters facing off against each other in the octagon at that time. That combined with the personalities that drive fights, whether it's a Brock Lesnar, whether it's Robert Whittaker, you know, all that type of stuff, that in itself creates more excitement for their fan base and for the people that want to see them get beat. Because they're all getting excited.
Yeah, that's it. You can see the energy when they're coming out, isn't it, straight away?
Yeah, it's incredible. Or like before the main event, you know, when certain people walk out or celebrities entered the arena, it's just incredible. Even when I walk into the arena, like in Brazil, you know, we haven't even had a fight yet. And those arenas usually are packed before the first fight. They love their UFC, as, you know, the fans down under do. And, you know, they want to be there and they're cheering like crazy. I just walk in, I haven't said a word yet, and I'm just the announcer. I mean, hey, calm down, guys. The fighters are about to come out, you know?
Okay. Yeah, we went to the Perth UFC 221, and that was a great event for us. But, you know, one of the main things that I actually love is that when you come on and it goes live to pay-per-view, and you stand in the middle of the octagon there, Bruce, and you're like, we are live, and everyone just cheers, you know what I mean? And then when you're going, it's time, and everyone just gets into it, you know what I mean? It must be a real buzz for you to have that energy behind you while you're doing your job. It must make your job a little bit easier.
Well, you know, it definitely creates a huge buzz. It makes the hair stand up on my arm, you know, and it's like when I do that and I get excited, as I usually always do, it just tells me that I still have passion for what I do, because I love this sport. I have love for all the fighters. I love who I work for and work with. I'm very lucky, and I realize that, and I try to stay on top of my game to maintain this position, because I know there's 5,000 guys or more out there waiting for me to drop dead to grab my position, and that's okay, too. I wouldn't have it any other way. I'm always game for a fight, but I love what I do. The excitement's there, and the adrenaline gets rushed. The moment my passion starts to wane, or I don't feel the hair standing up in my arms, you know, in an exciting moment, and you know what I mean by that, just an expression. Then it's probably time for me to retire, guys, because I'm not going to just do this for a paycheck, a plane flight, and a ticket at the show. You know, I got to travel the world 35 or more times a year just for the UFC, not counting my other events. So I better like and love what I do. It's not the hardest part of this job is the travel. That's the hardest part. It used to be great. The novelty's worn off, you know, but I have my moments. I'm looking forward to my flight down to Australia, because luckily living in Los Angeles, I got a direct line, and you know, I'll catch up on my movies and do my thing.
Yeah, that's it. I'll take you back a bit, Bruce. I mean, you said your brother, Michael, was it when you were younger, did you guys used to like face off across the bedroom and see who could be the best announcer? Is that how you guys got stuck into it or what?
Well, I mean, if I grew up with him, I'd be able to answer that. But I didn't grow up with Michael. Michael and I never met each other. My brother I grew up with was my brother, Brian. And if we sit across from each other in a room, it was probably because we were going to fight each other. but I love him to death. My brother Brian is an incredible human being. Michael and I only met when I was 29 years old. I had no idea he was my brother. I discovered him in the late 80s. I wrote about this in my book, It's Time. When Tyson got really popular in boxing, out came this very debonair, handsome, James Bond-looking type individual doing his rumble and getting better all the time and getting more popular. As popular as the boxers back in what was considered one of the true heydays of boxing, which was the water cooler conversation on a Monday at the office during those days, like the UFC is today, and of course certain boxing fights are too, boxing still being a very strong sport. We met each other, and 4 years after that, I sold two companies I owned, and I became his manager and his business partner, and trademarked that phrase properly with him to get it out there and start doing what we've done for the last 25 plus years. So my experience, my brother Michael, is, again, when I was like 28, 29 years old, that's when I met him.
Wow, that's a good story. I'm going to have to go and buy your book, It's Time, Bruce. Where can I get that?
I had it published in a number of countries, including Australia. I don't know if it's still available in the stores down there, but if you go on Amazon, you'll find copies. You'll probably get a used copy for like $5 or $6. You know, I'm not sure what they sell for down there. But, you know, I got great reviews. I put my heart on the table. I wrote that book with a lot of love and a lot of history involving my family, and talked about the UFC, but so much more. It involves my entire life. I'm very proud of it. And if you read it, I'd be very, very honored. And I hope you like it. And if not, then write a review on Amazon and tell everybody it sucked.
Well, it's best to tell the truth, right? You can, you know, you're always going to get always, the best out of it.
My man, I always tell the truth. Except at the poker table, because I want your chips. But I always, secret of life, always tell the truth. And it's legal to lie at the poker table. We all know it.
Tell us about that, the poker table in Perth while you're here. Let us know a little bit about Perth. You came here for 221, what your thoughts were. And we saw you at the poker table on your Instagram saying thanks to all your new made friends for giving you all their winnings, I think it was, pretty much. So.
Yeah, I think I had a good night when I was down there. I remember that. You know, poker to me is an analogy of life. It's an analogy of fighting. It's an analogy of sports. You have to know when to be offensive. You have to know when to be defensive. I'm a very competitive person. You have to know when to go in for the knockout for their chips, just like when you're going in the octagon to knock the opponent out. One of two things going to happen. You're either going to knock that person out or you're going to get knocked out. Well, that's the way it is in poker. And if you make one mistake, you're going to lose your chips, especially in a tournament where you can't rebuy chips. I love the competitive edge of poker. And I also, you know, when possible, I like to consider myself a winning player. I like making money. And, you know, money you win at the poker table is probably some of the most fun money to spend. There's no question. Any kind of money you win at gambling. But I don't recommend people play unless you play within your means and you treat it like a business and learn. Poker takes 5 minutes to learn, and like Mike Sexton says, it takes a lifetime to master. And I'm still working on it. And I've been playing poker cash games since I was 14.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I'm a bit of a poker man myself, but not to the level that I think you're at, Bruce, but maybe one day. Hey, listen, when you came to Perth, did you get to see much of it while you were here? Because obviously we're bringing the World Mini Football Federation World Cup that's going to bring over 3,000 people down to Perth to see what it's all about. Did you get to see much of it while you were here?
I saw a little bit, and what I did see I loved. I happen to love the country of Australia. I've never had a bad trip down there. I'm looking forward to Melbourne, which is very New York-y compared to here. If I do a comparison, Sydney being one of the greatest cities, in my opinion, in the world for all it has to offer. Perth was a wonderful place to visit, very cool. The courtesy, how nice everybody is, the way they treat us. I don't think there's anybody that I know that travels with the UFC that doesn't get excited about going to Australia.
Yeah, and that's a great place. We love it when we come back home. I feel like I want to be like the Pope and get down on my knees and kiss the tarmac, you know, when I get home, because it's just the smell in the air, you know.
I do that every time I wake up in the morning, just happy I got another day.
That's it.
This World Cup of Mini Football, do you know much about what we do there, Bruce, with the 6v6 World Cup coming?
You know, you'd have to explain a little more how the rankings and how it ramps up. Is it an elimination tournament that they're doing?
Yeah, it's a World Cup style, so it's similar to like the FIFA World Cup. So there's 32 nations coming across.
Okay,
there'll be eight groups of four, and obviously they play each other once, and then the top two go through to the knockout stages. So very exactly same format as the FIFA World Cup, but it's on the smaller side. It's a 6v6. It's more exciting. It's a 50-minute game. More goals, smaller field, 50 metres long by 30 metres wide. We're going to put a 5,000-seat stadium down there on the river in Perth. So it's going to be a great vista and the city right behind it. So, yeah.
No, that's exciting because with the smaller, shorter field, I mean, there's just, like you said, more goals, a lot more contact, you know, physical interaction. And it sounds to me, it's kind of like arena football here in the States, you know, where they made the arena smaller. But those arena football games are very exciting. Really exciting.
Well, our partners from the U.S., they come to these events from the arena football. So, they're the USA team, the guys who are running. I think it was out of Los Angeles. I think Ontario Fury. I think they were called. They were run out of there.
I think there's a team from the arena just signed Landon Donovan, the guy that played for the national team of the US.
Yeah.
Oh really?
Yeah. He's playing in the arena now. I think is it the Chokers or no? I can't remember. We'll have a quick look and we'll let you know. But yeah, Landon. So now all the ex-professional players, you know, they're seeing the potential of, you know, for them, obviously, to keep playing because obviously they love the sport. But, you know, when you're playing professional and you get to a certain age and it's like, well, you know, like you can't keep playing because, you know, you're getting older, injuries, blah, blah, blah. But when you get to that, you know, instead of playing 90 minutes, now you're playing only, you know, for 60 minutes, so it makes a big difference, and the halves are shorter as well, so it sounds
to me like you've designed the rules in the game to benefit these great, you know, former professional players coming in. It's like a new second life for them, but with one-third less effort, going from 90 to 60 minutes.
Yeah, that's it, and it's a high-scoring sport as well, Bruce, so it just goes so quick, you know, It is very exciting. Like when we went to Tunisia in 2017 for the World Cup there, It was like the best experience ever. It was basically being in a World Cup, but just in a smaller scale, and it was just unbelievable experience. So we were pretty excited with that. So now we're obviously excited to bring it to Perth, and you know, looking forward to host it and get the people down here and
hopefully get you down to possibly announce the final for us, Bruce, if you've got time in your schedule next this October.
Yeah, you know, I'd love to, and you know, we talked about this before. You know, I'm there for you. If I can make it down, there's other ways to bring me down visually that, you know, I can work for you. But you know, I checked it out, and it's like, listen, I was just at my boys, what we call soccer here in America, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So they played in torrential rain here. An all star, he's on this all star team. He's only 14, but I love watching him play. And the rain was torrential. It was cold. They were freezing. The only time they stopped the game is if thunder or lightning happened, which luckily didn't, but the rain was pouring.
Yeah.
Man, I love watching that game. And I love watching these 14-year-old boys not complain and get out there and grind it out for an hour as they played this game. I give them a lot of credit. You know, it's a very exciting game. And I think with the shorter field and all the action, it just makes it so much more.
Yeah, so I actually saw when you post that you were watching your grandson, and you were like, you know, like kind of soaking wet while watching it. So that's what I don't know if you saw my comment, but I put this like the future mini footballer there. I don't know if you saw my comment on your picture, but I put there like
I remember that comment. I don't always read the comments, but I did look at that because you know it's about my godson. He's my boy. I helped raise this kid. I've never been married. I've almost been divorced twice. I always say, but. I have helped raise two boys, and it's meant the world to me. They're very close. I'm their second dad. It's really close to me.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Bruce, those jackets, mate. You have to tell me about those. Where do you get them from? They are one of the main things. When I look at you, I'm wondering what is Bruce Buffer wearing today.
Thank you very much. My exclusive tailors are my. If you go on Instagram or Twitter, it's at My King and Bay, MY King and Bay. They're amazing. They're out of Toronto, Canada. I met them a few years ago. We got together, and they get this material that I've never seen other companies try to get. Really unique raw jacquard silk designs, and they only get enough material to make like two jackets. So they make my jacket, and then they'll make the second one. And on the inside, it'll say made special for Bruce Buffer. It'll give like for UFC 233, let's say. It'll have these wild designs inside, whether it's Conor McGregor's face on one side and Habib on the other side in the lining interior. And they auction off the second jacket, which usually, they tell me, sells for anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000. And they get back their costs and they donate the rest of the money to charity. So it's a nice little effort in their part, and best of all, I keep my jackets, so I'm happy.
Yeah, well, that's it. And Bruce, talking about your jackets, which one? I mean, I'm pretty sure all of them are the next level, but which one has been your most favorite jacket so far?
There's actually two. They're all great. They have to preface by saying they're all great. There's this one I wear that usually during the winter months, which is a blue, very wide, like velvet collar, and a blue speckle design in the jacket, and it's just so amazingly comfortable. But I love the way it looks. And then there's one that I had made for the Mayweather-Conor McGregor fight when Conor and Dana and everybody and the fans and stuff were, you know, pleading for my brother, hopefully Michael and I, to announce the fight together. And then it came down to me walking out with Conor to announce him on the way to the ring. But Showtime kiboshed that the night before. And with all respect, I understand, because they were loyal to their employees, you know, instead of me coming in and breaking it away from the well-known and very, very fine announcer, Jimmy Lennon Jr., who was working that night. But I had a jacket made for them. And if you go on my Instagram, I just did a event. You know, what's getting really big, guys, is this esports, where people are competing in video games like Fortnite and stuff.
Yeah.
And I did an event for a company I'm now the voice of called Esports over in ESP Gaming over in Vegas. And if you look at my Instagram, I think it was last week or whatever, but you'll see this jacket that I was wearing. That's the jacket that I had made for the McGregor fight. And that's another one of my favorites right there. It's got a lot of colors in it. I mean, you walk in a room, it's like, bam! Oh, I guess he walked in. Hey, Ken, this guy.
That's it. Yeah, no, I actually saw you those posts of the esports thing. Esports is huge. We're trying to integrate that into our World Cup of Mini Football. So hopefully we can get something down there at the World
Smart
Cup.
Move. Smart move, because it's a burgeoning building sport. No question.
Oh, they say it's one of the fastest growing sports, you know, because, you know, and parents don't understand that kids or teenagers can make money from it, and there's big coin in it as well, isn't there?
Well, there is. The one I did here in LA, there was $40,000 each, that the $40,000 the winners got, the team of two people. Not bad for two 15, 16-year-olds that's spending a day on the stuff. Fortnite is putting out, they tell me, $100 million in tournament winnings this year alone for all the tournaments they will have, combined with the people I work for and others. Here's the one thing though, guys, I'm a video game player. I've played since Pong, Space Invaders, you know, on and on and on. I've made three video games. Have you ever played them? The Ready to Rumble boxing arcade style games that I made with my brother back in 2000, and I made three of those games. I'm working on a fourth right now. And I've been in about 10 video games myself, whether it's UFC and otherwise. So I really enjoy the industry. But the one thing growing up as a kid, when parenting now is actually becoming, I think, a little more difficult because of video gaming. You know, you've got the kids in the screens and the hours they need to spend. And I mean, when I was a kid, I'm running out playing baseball till, you know, 4 o'clock, getting home for dinner, going to the local mall, whatever. You know, more communication, more whatever. The kids do communicate, and the people that play adult-wise also do communicate through the headphones with the people they're playing with. But I really think it's important to have a discipline with your kids to make sure that they not only enjoy that aspect of their lives, but they also work on being outside, being boys, being girls, communicating more.
Yeah.
There are issues with this that need to be overcome, but it is definitely a very exciting, and it's going to grow into be a huge, huge sport.
Yeah. Well, in as you said before, in our times when we were younger, I mean, you had the Atari, you know, and then you got the Sega and Nintendo. But like as you said, we were in the streets playing, you know, sport, baseball, basketball, whatever, soccer. But then, you know, like you had the odd day that you wanted to go back and then play a little bit of Pac-Man and stuff like that. But now it's like, as you said, you see this is. Because we have technology everywhere, it makes it more reachable for kids to obviously be behind the screen most of the time. But yeah, it's not good, you know. As you said, we need to do something about that. And we totally agree, Brian and myself. We always say the same, you know.
Well, you know, it's a serious note, and I'm not taking away anything what they're doing, because I think it's wonderful, and I love hearing these kids making lots of money, and hopefully they will not just be players, but get into the industry and other aspects to create a future job for themselves. You know, because the competition, like any athlete, you know, I know they're young, but you never know. It's like, you know, are you going to be able to make that kind of money all the time? And if you do, great. But usually only the top 2% make all the money, and no matter what sport we're in, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
All that being said and put aside, on a serious note on it, I noticed when I've been around a lot of the young people playing, you know, that what's happening now is, I was talking about this on Joey Diaz's podcast the other day when I was in his office, or in his podcast. We got on the subject. The kids, as a rule, they're not looking you in the eye when they talk to you. There's a little bit of there's so much into the gaming, they're not communicating, as I was saying earlier. So, you know, when you walk in a room, if you want a job, you got to look that guy in the eye, shake his hand, let him know you're there. I just want them to still work and prime themselves for the communication, personable skills they will need to get through life in the future and achieve all they want to achieve. It's just my main wish. Yeah, one of my wishes for the young populace.
Absolutely.
Bruce, you do a bit, correct me if I'm wrong, you sell off your or you auction off your cards, that your reading cards for specific matches, and then do you donate that to charity as well, similar to what the guys do with your jackets?
Yeah, the cards I've only auctioned off like 15 times, and I just auctioned off, instead of as a set, they're the fight cards I hold in my hand. They're one of a kind, and you've seen them when I put the pictures up. Yes, I donate to animal, military, and children charities, partial proceeds to them. And, you know, of course, there's costs involved. Like, you know, I give a good amount, but I'm amazed at how the price of some of these cards have gone. I just sold the two UFC 232 cards through a company called Inscriptographs, rather, which will probably auction off all my future material for me when I do it. And again, for, you know, partial proceeds do definitely go to charity. Last one was from the Make-A-Wish Foundation, which does a wonderful job for what they do in the world. The John Jones card, and most of the cards sold for like 120 and up, but the John Jones card sold for 250 or so. And with that, they get signed pictures, signed autographs, plus a personalized audio championship introduction to themselves, like if they were in the octagon that I do for them. The Amanda Nunes card, who, when she fought Cyborg, that card, there was a bidding war that went on between the man that owns American Top Team, Amanda's manager, and some other people on the internet. That card sold for $4,272. One card. Crazy.
Look, I think you shouldn't underestimate who you are, Bruce Buffer. Because you're at the top of your game. You're at the top of the one of the best games going around, and you know people want to see how the best do it. And you know, I don't see why you wouldn't be reaching those heights with those cards being auctioned off.
I appreciate that very much. I just basically listen. I like to set on a path and be the best I can be, as I say at the end of my podcast. I've been that way my whole life. I can only be and do the best I can be and the best I can do. And I appreciate your kind words, but I consider myself equal to everybody. You know, it's just, unless you want to try and have an ounce off with me, I'm going to blow you out of the water. But I mean, outside of that, or play poker, but I treat everybody equal and everybody with respect. I don't like arrogance and I don't like conceit. I think there's room to be nice to everybody.
Absolutely. We're on the same page as that, Bruce. Look,
I have one more question, Bruce, before we let you go.
Sure.
What do you know or what do you think about GSP? Because I heard something about GSP trying to get Conor in their UFC octagon and have a fight. Do you know anything about that?
No, I've heard, you know, rumors about that. As you're hearing, listen, everybody wants to fight Conor because Conor, you know, is going to bring tons of eyeballs to the table, as George also does. That would be a huge super fight, we'll call it, okay?
Yeah.
Probably could be one of the, if not the biggest pay-per-view ever, in my opinion. Yeah. And I would love to see it, and I would love to announce it. Mm-hmm. But I have no idea, gentlemen. There's all this scuttlebutt going around. I mean, we hear about Conor and this guy, and Conor and that guy, and everybody else says, I want to fight Conor, and, you know...
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. They just handed down these suspensions, which I know are retroactive.
Yeah.
So Conor could probably fight, by my calculations, he should be able to fight by May, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
May or June. So hopefully there's going to be a big fight planned, and we'll get it done. They'll get it done. I'll just be there to try and enhance the moment.
Yeah, that's it.
Khabib's the boss in that weight division in my eyes. You know, he actually mauled Conor on that last event, but he pulls the numbers, that's for sure. So,
Conor, he pulls the numbers, but you know what? You're going to see Khabib pulling numbers on his own. Khabib went after that evening, even in the horrific way that it ended. Khabib went from like about 1 million Instagram followers, shot up to like 14 plus million. I think he's at now.
Yeah.
You know, he became the hero, and to those not in the know, unmistakably the villain to some, or you know, the ultimate warrior, or whatever. But Khabib is one of the nicest, most respectful men you will ever meet in your life. He's very respectful. His switch just turned that night. I'm not condoning it. It was wrong. But the switch turned. You know, and some of us, when our switches turn, we have a hard time going back, you know.
Yeah, well,
Not condoning it, excusing a single thing because it was wrong, period.
Yeah, well, I was listening to the Joe Rogan podcast with TJ Dillashaw yesterday, I think it was, and they were talking about how all these high-level athletes are bordering on psychotic because they have to be. They have to believe in themselves so much to push themselves so hard to get to that level to then jump into the ring and actually, you know, attack someone and pull out their skills. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me. Like, even, like, it's like when Conor, he snapped and went through the chair at the bus and all that sort of stuff. Obviously, something's clicked and, you know, it's a minute of madness that, you know, sticks forever, to be honest.
Well, all I want to say is some minutes of madness are much worse than others. Enough said.
That is true. Bruce, and for all our listeners out there, you should head to brucebuffer.com to see what Bruce can offer you out there. Bruce, you can do a whole bunch of announcing and personal announcing video streams. Let us know a little bit about that.
You know, it's something. I started this off with my partner Kristen. She handles everything when you go in the office. She's my right arm, and I don't know what I do without her. She basically can run everything for me. So, with that being said, we started this off just as a favor. I did it as a Christmas special a couple of years ago because fans were paying me and offering me, you know, pretty large sums of money to just do like a championship audio introduction, like they're in the Octagon. I thought, you know, I'm here because of the fans. I'm here to serve the fans and enhance the moment for them as well as the fighters. To me, it's all about the fighters and the fans. So we ran the special for $99 to do championship introductions, and I don't even want to tell you what people have offered me just to do that. But again, we got such response to it, and I thought, you know, the thank you notes I got tears in my eyes and a number of them. It just made me feel so good to do something that made people happy, that we extended and we made it an ongoing business. And now it's evolved. We always kept that $99 special. I haven't changed that at all. But now it's evolved into videos. You can get videos of it. I'm doing the tons of the birth of babies. I did Stipe Miocic, his wife, gave birth to their new baby, right? So they sent me a note, and I sent them back a video, or rather an audio, announcing the birth of their baby. and they put it out on Instagram, and it went viral. Suddenly, I'm getting all these requests for the birth of babies. You know, like, coming out now! You know, that kind of thing. It's like, weighing in at 7 pounds, 6 ounces. 4 inches, up, 6 inches long! You know, whatever. So it's like,
that is epic.
And so the baby thing and what really took off was weddings. And that really set Kristen and I off because I got to tell you, when I tell you I get tears in my eyes at some of the thank you notes come in, I'm serious, guys. I'm Italian. I'm emotional. And I like making people happy. I'm very karmic. If I can make people happy around me, I know happiness will come back to me. And it just fueled it that we just started a whole new business. So you can go to brucebuffer.com, and let's say you have a podcast or you've got a business, you want to do a social media post or whatever. I'm open to everything. Just send in your written request, and I will do pretty much – I've only turned down – well, I do turn down some because some of the requests are a little weird, but that's very rare. Most all are, like, really cool, and I won't do anything. And I don't curse. I don't curse in the videos, guys. Don't even ask me to. I won't do it. I can trash talk the hell out of something and build a fight, I guarantee I won't have to say a single curse word.
No, perfect. So there's brucebuffer.com, guys. There's It's Time podcast for Bruce. There's his book, It's Time. You can get that on Amazon. And there's, have you still got the figurine, or did that sell out, the bobblehead figurine, Bruce?
I think there's only 1,000. I think there's a few left, according to Dave Manley, who makes those. He said the mine has really been selling well, but I'm sure there's some left. You know, they're collector's items. Remember the round 5 figures they had years ago? All those have gone up in price, as well as the original Topps cards for UFC. You know, I'm a big collector of memorabilia, and when you get stuff like this for the fans listening, UFC fans listening, hold on to that stuff. Put it away. And have your fighter friends, whenever you can, have them sign it, all that kind of stuff, because it's all worth money, whether you want to sell it or not. You know, be smart about your collectibles, most definitely.
Well, that's it. Well, I'm going to go and buy one now. So when I move into my new house, I've got Bruce Buffer with his bobblehead.
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. There's a lot of other cool fighters on the thing. He's got some really cool ones coming out, and they all look great. You know, just have your set and play your fake fights with me in the middle.
Yeah, that's it. All right, Bruce, we really, really appreciate you taking some time out to speak to us on this Australian Mini Football podcast. We're going to throw it through our Instagram, our Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, everything. So we'll tag you in everything. And we wish you all the best for this upcoming weekend in Melbourne, and obviously for the future.
Thank you so much. And if you follow me on Instagram, just go to @BruceBufferUFC. I mainly post on Instagram, and then it goes out to Twitter and Facebook, but I do like Instagram. Guys, keep up the great work. You know, we talk about the video games and all that, and, you know, you're young, got a long career ahead of you. The mini football, everything I've seen, I'm very proud and honored that you even came to me to potentially be part of, you know, a future game or season for you. It's great stuff. And I got to tell you, the sports fans in Australia, they are great sports fans. Man, that is a sports country if I ever saw one. No question.
It is, yeah, indeed. I mean, I come from Mexico. We're very big fans of sports, but here they go mad, Bruce. Like anything, if you just put a ball to bounce in the street, they all call it a sport. You know, they're that mad. You know.
I know, it's crazy. It's great from Mexico to down under. Yeah,
it's just around the corner, Bruce. Don't worry.
Gentlemen, thank you so much.
Thanks, Bruce. We look forward to have you in Perth next time. Please let me know or let us know. And you have your second home here with us. You know, we can look after you if needed. You know, you can always count on us. So just, you know, we'll keep in touch anyway. We want to get one of your videos for one of our businesses as well. So we'll keep in touch soon as well, mate.
Very happy to be of help in anything you want. Thank you so much, gentlemen, again. It's been a pleasure. And just keep up the great work, man. Keep it up and keep in touch and let me know how everything's going.
Definitely, Bruce. We'll keep in touch, mate. Have a great night, I'll say, the rest of the night. And good flight and safe flight to Melbourne. The best of luck in the octagon. And we'll see you and speak next time.
Thanks so much. I'm going to go to the gym now for a couple hours and get all this Super Bowl food out of me.
Thanks, Bruce. You're the boss.
Take care, guys.
See you, mate. Thanks.